and as all silent decisions on any type of energy that the silent council has jurisdiction over, whether it be solar, geothermal, or wind. You can have an officer going to California, he's an extremely concerned and involved with environmental legislation in the state of California. He was expressing his dismay over the site of the geothermal plant in California, the laboratory in California, because of the tremendous amount of pollution that is involved in the noise pollution and the sulfur pollution and the defoliation that has occurred in the immediate vicinity of the geysers, where geothermal is being used in one of the few plants in the world, or at least the few plants in the United States where energy is being produced from the geothermal source. I cite this to you just simply to show that environmental concerns are not just limited, they are not just limited. And the public's concerns are not limited, only limited. But for some of the other energy forms, which Oregon may be fortunate enough to possess in some great quantity, and Arizona will also have controversy surrounding them as the public begins to understand what effect the New York Times mentions, and also geothermal is a great source, and hopefully it will be a great source. But there are going to be trade-offs that occur even there. And this streamlining of the siting council's decision-making ability and the ability of interested parties to get their case heard and to have that case adjudicated and finally brought to a final decision of state government is what Senate Bill 1181 is all about. And I'm hopeful that with the adoption of these amendments that we can go forward in order to order the process to provide not only for the future energy needs of the state, but also the protection of every legitimate concern on both sides of what will and has been and will continue to be the controversial issue. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thanks, Senator Gray. The amendments that were on our folder accomplish the two things you outlined, the proper procedure for the appeal, the specifically the construction issue, and you pointed out as to precluding anyone from appeal, I think that objection should be totally dispelled in these amendments.
If the
does not have the right to deny the request to resume, then the request will be deemed denied after 60 days from the date the request was made. The denial, or the deemed denial, the 60 days the Supreme Court starts running.
Isn't that the exact language that exists for APA?
Exactly.
I read that about midnight a week ago.
The confusion of existing law is not true.
It's a restatement of the confusion provisions.
Well, good enough. It's a restatement to be seen that it goes through the same language, basically, anywhere the word Court of Appeals appears in the APA, the word Supreme Court is being substituted. Now, let me ask you a question. The council has made a decision. They have decided to reject or accept one way or another. They've gone through all the hearings, they've made their decision. And I agree with that. But I've been asking for a reason.
Yes, you can.
You have 50 days.
Time, yes, you know, that's what I'm saying. You'll adjourn at 2:30, and what I'm saying is I think it's very clear to get the bill out. I just want to be fair enough to get there. It may well be that his objection is minimal. Maybe you can report it to the meeting that you had with him. I'm specifically interested in that.
Just the same meeting, the same deal, the meeting for the ordinary agency. I talked to you for the senior witness team. I was really here for the session yesterday. The last word that he gave me was that he said his words lived with a change.
Do you have the bill in front of you?
I think we do, yes.
A change on line 14, which would delete the words as soon as reasonably possible, end quote, substituting the word immediately. I told him that we did not agree with that amendment, and that the process had been one of serious and deep negotiation with all affected parties on this measure for a long time, including Representative Starr, and that we clearly wanted the bill to move as it was. If we could do so. We left it at that. I don't know how much he wants to push that.
So what you're saying is that he still doesn't agree specifically.
We're not in agreement on that.
That's the way I understood it. Senator Zona, do you have any comments on this bill?
Senator, either one of you.
Do you do?
Let's just go with the bill then. We'll move it out as it is. All right, call the roll on that motion, please. We'll move the bill out, 3166.
Yes.
All right.
Aye. Aye. Motion carried. Dick, this insurance bill that we got, this is something you want us to do?
There's supposed to be a conflict with another.
Okay. Then, why don't we, listen, let's put it on Monday morning, shall we?
Might as well kick it out now. If the conflict's resolved, it wasn't a conflict. You know, if the conflict has been resolved, or they have their legislative council.
They haven't brought us any conflict in the council.
They haven't. Let's set it over till Monday.
Okay, I'll call 908 is set over until Monday.
And find out where they're.
Okay, now we have this Metropolitan Service District bill. There was some conflict amendments necessary for it. Is that correct? Those are in the folder.
Yes. It's Neil and Jim Crest are here to explain it.
Okay.
I've learned from you, Mr. Chairman, that you have to watch the House bill very carefully when you come over here.
Well, yes, that's why I also set this note, and these other conflict notices, we're going to have to be right on top of them, because we're wasting everyone's time by going down and coming back. Now, you explain the amendments.
Mr. Chairman, the plot thickens here. For the record, Representative Jim Crest from Portland, Mr. 15. We've got the conflict to take care of the problem that arose on the Senate floor yesterday. The conflict amendment for that, and to provide for that, that this would go to the voters. But another conflict has arisen, and I'm going to let Fred Neal explain that. And Fred, why don't you go ahead?
The Metropolitan Service District was granted by this legislative assembly the power to issue revenue bonds without voter approval. And now, so 2683, which will be passed in early March or late February. It was signed by the governor and is law. Unfortunately, it did not amend the existing statutory provision, which requires voter approval for a revenue bond. This is one reason that the confusion persisted up to last night as to what NSC's powers were. So as soon as 2683 was codified, there is presently a legal conflict between House Bill 2683 and present ORF law, and
when it's codified, it'll be a statutory conflict that is in addition to this bill or anything relating to dome facilities. On the other hand, since it does deal with bonding capacity, we as the council would advise to use this bill as additionally as a vehicle to amend ORS 268.520, which is the authorization to issue GOs and revenue bonds, to delete the references to revenue bonds so that the that this Sessions law, Chapter 95 or Law 77, would prevail and would be the only provision in ORS relating to the MSD's revenue bonding capacity.
Mr. Chairman, if I might say this, I've resisted through the process of putting anything else in House Bill 3308 relating to anything other than what we were attempting to get at. Fred and I have been talking, and there is no other vehicle around that could take care of that particular conflict as it relates to House Bill 2683 and existing statutes. So I suggested to him, okay, in order to resolve that conflict, to go ahead and use 3308 in addition as a vehicle. I would hope, beyond hope, that that wouldn't bring down the rash of, or the wrath of, maybe rash, on House Bill 3308 and hinder its forward mobility in any way. I think, you know, if we're really talking in fairness, the 2683 did pass, and as Senator Atiyah said, not as far as everybody was concerned, but I think by healthy majorities in both houses. And I would be willing to and consent to this being amended to resolve that conflict, and would hope that we could have the cooperation of the committee to do that.
Well, I need to understand what's happening here. We passed this bill as it sits. Then if 2070 becomes law, you make a further amendment.
To 2070. See, the question of conflict amendments is whichever passes last prevails.
You said that House Bill 2683 removed the authority to
Senator Atiyah,
vote on revenue bonds.
The amendments before you was all conflicts with House Bill 2070. That's the printed amendments, the typed amendments in front of you. As of today, I've discerned this additional conflict with House Bill 2683.
So we need some more amendments than what we have here.
Yes, and if the committee would move those conceptually, we could still have these amendments to the
state. What are we conceptually? This says there's approval of the orders of the district, which is
well,
the language.
Yes, that would all be unchanged. I mean, I would, and Representative Kress is proposing these amendments, and I'm advising, in addition, a conceptual motion on the committee's part to amend ORS 268.520 to resolve the conflict with Chapter 95 of Oregon law.
But we don't have that.
No.
Which happened, Bill? I'm sorry for being so dense. 2683 passed and allowed revenue bonds to be sold without a vote.
Right.
Okay. The amendment I have in front of me says there needs to be a vote.
For the purpose of acquiring, constructing, altering, maintaining, administering, and operating
right.
Major
coal. You want to give us an amendment that would remove the right to vote?
No. This would still be necessary. The approval of the voters of the district would still be necessary to acquire, construct, alter, or maintain sports facilities. That would take a specific vote on sports facilities. What 2683 does, and if it's still the legislative assembly's intent, would
amend ORS 520 to delete the existing statutory references requiring votes for revenue bonds, any revenue bonds. The amendments before you, the 3308, would still require, would insert the requirement that there be a approval of majority of votes. That was the difficulty last night.
Well, somebody either close that door or tell those people to send their party down the line. Can you do that for me? Yeah.
If I may, let me back up a little bit. House Bill 3308 intended to do one thing, allow MSD to send a proposition to the voters to build or whatever a sports recreation convention facility. That was the intent, to send it to the voters, let them approve it. We found out last night about the conflict because House Bill 2683 had already passed and it's been signed by the governor.
Yeah.
Right. And that allowed issue revenue bonds and GOs without a vote.
That came out of the committee, didn't it?
I don't know whether you had it. I think kind of local. So the first thing that we wanted to do with House Bill 2308 was to insert in page 2 of the bill, appendix bill, line 8, after sub 6, with the approval of the voters of the district. That takes care of what our intent, what the bill originally was to do, which is, as it related to a sports facility. That has to go to the voters. That would allow or resolve the conflict between House Bill 3308 and 2683. That resolved that conflict along with the conflict amendment. There is still an existing conflict within existing statutes and House Bill 2683. And what Fred is suggesting, in order to resolve that conflict, that we use House Bill 3308 as a vehicle. And as I said before, I was reluctant to clutter this up with anything else. I wanted to keep it clean. But if it's the only way it can be done, then use House Bill 3308, and I think it is.
The additional conflict amendments, Senator Attia, are with House Bill 2070, which is up for third reading within a matter of days in the second chamber.
The thing we have to bear in mind with 2070, well, no, we don't, because they've taken a referral out of it, haven't they?
Yes.
Okay, and I don't know that the House is going to concur in that amendment, and the referral could be put back in it, and if it is, and both houses concur, then that bill will go to the voters. And if the voters turn it down, then, you know, you got another problem there. But it's clean this way, and in addition to a conflict amendment as regards 2683. The conflict amendments before you say that if House Bill 2070 becomes law, the provisions in House Bill 2070 would be, as they amended any ORS sections or added new law, would be further amended by House Bill 3308 to provide that, number one, the district could presently, with voter approval, acquire, maintain, construct, operate, alter a sports or convention facility. And number two, since C and Growth 2070, which I understand is being printed tonight, will places a limitation on the, it authorizes MSD to alter, construct, maintain sports or convention facilities, but Senate local government has amended it to say that first, the tax base or income tax must be authorized by the district voters. Since you would, through 3308 in these amendments, be saying that any attempt to build a major sports facility would require voter approval, and it probably would not be financed through income tax or property tax, that limitation shouldn't be in there, and you would amend House Bill 2070 were it to become law so that the district could go ahead and do it with voter approval. Those are the amendments before you. The additional amendment that I have suggested deals with conflicts between ORS and what is already passed
folks out.
With voter approval means not just the approval of doing that. It means approval of doing that and the financing for it. That's what it means.
One would assume that.
No.
But I know that absolutely 100% is the intent. That the financing scheme, the whole thing, has to have voter approval.
Okay. I think that's what you meant. I don't want to assume anything.
Yeah.
Is that what it says?
No, it does not say that. It says with the approval of the voters of the district, a district may acquire, construct, alter, and maintain.
All right.
If the voters were to approve such steps without the finance, with concomitantly voting on financing, you may want to tie that down, but
Yeah, I do. The point is, if the 2683 passes, well, it's passed.
No.
Then all they would have to do is approve the facility, and then they could sell the revenue bonds without a vote. Correct?
Right. That's really the only method of financing available to MSD now without voter approval is revenue.
I understand.
Revenue bonds.
But you intend it to be the vote on the revenue bonds.
Absolutely, Vic. It's all the way through. That's been the intent. Now, this is the first I realized that it didn't speak directly to that. I guess, then what Fred's saying, that they could send a proposition to the voters that wouldn't speak to how it's going to be financed. Well,
in 2016,
damn it, I wanted to speak about finance.
Okay, that's his intention in mind as well.
Well, you know,
the MSD can issue revenue bonds. Can they issue revenue bonds currently in Metropolitan Tourist District?
Yes, they could under ORS 268 before the 77th session began.
Yes.
But they would have required voter approval. House Bill 2683 did not amend that law, but instead added new provisions relating strictly to the sale of revenue bonds in which it provided that they may be sold without voter approval.
Of course, that doesn't upset me too much because if the bonds aren't viable, it's...
You flaming liberal, you.
Please let me complete what I'm not as liberal as it sounds. If the person building the buildings can't show the financial security and the income flow to be able to market the bonds, the revenue bonds aren't worth anything anyway. At least now I move back out of the flaming liberal arena back into
back to home task.
But if it isn't, you know, if it isn't a bankable loan, we don't loan. So that doesn't upset me too much.
Well, in this case, what you have is a member of your committee who wants.
I understand
their bond to go before the voting people.
Well, I would suggest that we do that.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, I've never said any time down along the line that it should not be sent to the voters. The financing scheme, the plan, in fact, I think I said before this committee earlier, and the first time I appeared here, I wanted to see something in there to say where it was going to be built. But, we can't do that. I realize that.
Okay. Then I think we've got to do a little more work then.
Then on page 2 of the amendments, in sub 6, where we've added with the approval of the voters of the district, I would suggest with the approval of adequate financing by the voters of the district. I don't think you want to limit MSD to revenue bonds specifically for financing. They may want a mix.
Well, what I was thinking is that this is the same thing, is something to the effect that any financing provision must be approved by the voters in addition to the provision of building one.
Can I just suggest that we know what we want to do? We will meet Monday morning.
Yes, we will.
Let's have the language there to do that.
Fine.
That's right.
Sure.
Let's get off of this. Well, it says page 2 of the printed bill. Actually, you're talking about page 3 of the printed bill.
I think it is.
I had trouble trying to find that in line 8. Mm-hmm. I just had trouble finding that over to page 3.
Page 2 of the proposed amendment, but we...
Well, one of the other can't say printed bill.
Let's see if we can
take it up Monday morning.
May I ask Senator to you a question?
Yes.
Do you have objections to the language I suggested?
I'll leave it to Jim in terms. What you're saying is they can do it with
approval of the finance.
Can they sell property tax bonds?
The voters may approve a tax base.
Well, MSD has been very reluctant to do that.
That's right. The voters, yes. That's correct.
Yes.
That would be property tax.
Yeah, they haven't had the intestinal fortitude to come forward with that yet.
They did once and were shot down.
Right.
GOs would, of course, require voter approval.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, that's what I say. We're trying to be straight and above board, and anything that they're going to come out with, we want to go to the voters and let them decide. You know, that's the whole intent behind it. And again, if you feel comfortable with putting in here the conflict amendment to address 2683.
I don't really care, as long as we end up with what you want and I want.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, should I then prepare amendments for the conflict of 2683 with ORS 268.520.
Run that by me again.
The additional conflict of existing legal provisions on revenue bonding, should I prepare amendments for House Bill 3308 to resolve those conflicts?
I think they should, and the result should be that notwithstanding House Bill 2683 provisions of the intent and the provisions of 3308, which would require the vote.
Well, I think that's adequate. And once you specifically required voter approval for that specific activity, you superseded that.
Okay. That's the way the resolve should flow, though.
Yeah, certainly.
Okay. Good. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Janet, do you want to come up on 3299. Do we have something for us? Maybe that's what I should be looking at. Do we have some proposals on that bill?
I've seen these, Mr. Chairman. Janet, what do you think?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Janet McLennan, Assistant to the Governor of Financial Resources. Mr. Castagna provided me with a copy of the proposed amendments in a marked up bill, and I have reviewed them, and I think they're fine.
Can you tell us briefly, Bob, what the thrust
is? Okay.
So basically, in
the former version of the bill you had, House Bill 3299A in gross, it took a declaration of the governor to start the ball rolling on these plans, and within the 30 days, then the political subdivisions or the local or the state agencies would have developed the plan, and then they would have been subject to review. Well, now what happens is the Water Resources Director now would have the authority to order individual state agencies and political subdivisions to develop those plans. Those plans could be on a standby basis, and the kicker or the implementing device would then be the declaration of the governor that there is a severe continuing drought, and then those plans would be implemented within a time certain determined by the governor.
Is it clear, Bob, that he can make a declaration for Roseburg or Beaverton?
The governor may order individual state agencies and political subdivisions within any drainage basin or sub-basin. So even though the plans could be developed anywhere where the Water Resources Director saw fit, the governor could be problem-specific and order individual ones to implement the plan.
That's right, thank you. It does take the reverse. One was going to wait till the drought occurred and then ask for comparable plans. this goes the other way. This would allow the Water Resources Director to get plans drafted, as Bob said, a standby, which then everybody knows about it to be triggered when the government makes a declaration. While you're looking at it,
okay, we'll just recess then for a second while I read the bill.
Now, legislative council indicated to me they might want to change a few things stylistically, but nothing to change the intent or anything like that.
The bill requires the director of the order state agencies and critical subdivisions. That's specifically who the order is given to.
Yes,
those are the people that are involved.
Right. And there's a distinction made between the water conservation or the curtailment plant. So he could order either or both.
How does that then, I guess there's no conflict at all between the authority of the director and the other uses of water, as we discussed last time, Janet, the situation involving the beneficial use of water is already put to an entity we left in.
That section is kept as it was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll have to ask Senator Whipple, when he's going to be down here shortly, to look at it, and we'll act accordingly. I believe that he'll either approve it or reject it. And if he does, when we meet Monday, I'll ask the full committee to consider. I appreciate your help in that area.
Thank you.
Mr. Yes, that's been Steve.
We did have that bill in Water Resources.
Yes. It came out of the special committee.
Yeah. The way it was originally drafted, there were some problems, and in trying to straighten them out, we never did get that particular part of it straightened out about the starting of the planning and then the implementation of the planning. And I've read the amendments, and I think that they clearly do what we had intended to do in the first place, and I think the amendments are acceptable. I can't see anything wrong with them.
It seems to me that we're a little more specific with the plan, where the other was had the implications of covering all uses of water, but then we had the conflict of the water rights question that seemed to prevail. You read it that way, Bob?
I think, as Senator Attia said, we sort of reversed the process. You know, here at any time, the director can order a plan, but there's no implementation. The other way, you just would have had 30 days and the plan is implemented immediately. So this may allow a little more time for the plan to be aired. But I think in terms of the water rights question, you know, both bills have the same provisions. So I really don't think we're going to get into that area of conflict.
You recall, Senator Whipple said, what use is the bill with Section 4 in it? I think this makes more clear that we're talking about municipal and the water districts and those kinds of both supply and use of water, as opposed to the more general concept of water streams, water in wells. That's fairly accurate.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Wimble's going to come down shortly, and we have Vic will be back. We've got a couple of the bills clear off the agenda.
Mike,
I don't know that you need to stay.
Okay, well,
I know you're saying
Mr. Davis will stay.
Okay, if we need to. Okay.
Yeah. Mike, I think it might add to the bill to in your intent statement to make sure it says in there that there is no intent to anything this bill shall in any way affect water rights. Mm-hmm. I think
it's fairly clear in the bill now that Section 4, I think it would, right, that'll be adequately covered. Mm-hmm. Senator Whipple on his way down, possibly. Could he? Okay, would you run up and see if he could come down for just a couple of minutes? He's in the meeting room, I understood. Room A, is he not?
We had him programmed at 25.
Yeah, I had a special appointment.
This committee's fast. You don't move all day to get their work done.
I guess I'm the only one here, so let me go tell the members of the committee anything.
You can bring
in
the record.
As the members of the committee receive the AG's opinion on 345?
Those that were here today.
Okay. Now we're in man, some minutes. We can get this membership on committee still out, I think.
What, do we have problems with this one? 3299?
I don't have problems with it.
I don't really have problems with it.
Senator Zoner, we've now gotten what I believe to be, at least Senator Akia accepts a revised version of the governor's powers as it relates to, well, the bill's been, it was originally
the bill number
3299. That's the hand and grocery in front of you. We've some amendments with the hand and grocery bill that make it clear when the plans will develop, who will do it, and I think more clearly defines what the plan will involve as far as who's going to required to put together. I think the bill is in pretty good shape. You'll note that it says specifically in the first typewritten pages what the bill shall do. And I think that's I think that makes some good changes.
Very little different from what we've been
working. It's patterned after the curtailment plan on energy, electrical energy, well, not electrical, the energy curtailment plan. And it kind of reverses the cycle. It says the director shall call these people, call upon these people to prepare plans for the case.
The existing agencies they call upon. And there's no fiscal implication then as far as the bill is concerned, you guys understand.
The bill came to us and it was the direction of if an emergency exists, then Water Resources asks for curtailment plans and go through that stage, which can be put into effect, and then if it's human and livestock water needed, it becomes an even greater emergency and the governor gets involved in a lesser.
That's a rough paraphrasing.
This turns it around to the extent that the Water Resources Congress can ask for emergency plans before all this takes place.
Good.
Then they're laying there as a standby, as Bob had used the word, and then the governor can trigger those.
I have no objection. I would move the bill to the floor.
So ordered. Will you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Okay, we have another bill I think we can agree upon, and that's 3205, which is. Dick, will you carry the plant? You want to carry that hazardous waste railroad bill, Dick?
I would carry it, yes.
Would you like to do that? I'd be happy to have you do it if you're.
Is there something wrong with it?
Well,
Whipple will oppose you on
Whipple
that.
Will probably oppose you.
We wanna,
I don't mind that.
Are you afraid of, are you afraid of taking him on?
We're in there with you. You carry that one, all right? Okay. Now, the membership on committee bill was proposed maybe.
Hi, Roger.
Who's going to carry through the board?
Okay. The thrust of the amendment to House Bill 3205, which is the bill we had earlier that came from legislative, the Committee on Legislative Operations Procedures. The amendment that's being proposed is an amendment to create a Section 2A, which speaks to the need for subject to the confirmation by the Senate. I think that relates to Senate Bill 10, is that not right? A conflict with Senate Bill 10, which has been passed. So what I'd like to do is put that amendment back in the bill and then send it back, and if the House has any work they want to do on it, they can. Any objection to those amendments?
Well, let me ask you this. As I understand the bill, the only entire Senate, the committee of six could make the decision, and would it still be an interim, and it would still be during the interim, and when the session, during the session, the Senate would still act upon it. Is that right?
Well, this is for the Senate Committee on Executive Appointment.
That's what I realize that.
Yeah. And during the interim, they would act on it.
As they always have.
This amendment, just to clarify a conflict between Senate Bill 10 and this particular bill, 3205.
He removes the amendment. Mary will call the roll on the motion and send it out as amended to pass.
Sophia?
Aye.
John? Yes. John?
Aye.
Quickly, yes. John?
Aye.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
I should move on 20.
Oh, I will carry that one. That's pretty simple.
Okay, that's just still says what we've been doing all the time anyway.
The only bill that we have left on the agenda is House Bill 2820 and 2820 and Senator Groner, I'm sure you're not in supporting that bill unless you give us a vote to get it out. Otherwise, I'll have to wait and the whistle comes down.
That's right.
Well, Betty Brown is around. Do you suppose she's interested in supporting that bill?
Probably any of you would.
Just wait for another vote, Bill. Just wait for the final vote. Some of the other senators.
What about,
do we know what Betty is? She's in the
Betty Brown is in the district.
I sent somebody after him. We got 3 minutes.
Senator's brother seen Mark a man.
Yeah.
Senator Rhodes, do you have a question?
3308.
My girlfriend.
3308 is hung up pending another.
Pending 2027.
Well,
that 2070 is going to pass.
We have a conflict amendment so that if 2070.
Dick? Yeah, I've got a copy of that.
Out of my county.
If 2070 passes, it's a conflict amendment proposed to 3308, which will, in essence, say the procedures in 2070, however that issue is resolved.
Okay. We'll wait for what, see what happens to 27.
Well, what we're proposing to do is put into the 3308 an amendment that in essence says that whatever happens on 2070 will be the rule here, I think, is the fair statement.
2070 is going to close the capacity.
Well, that's a question that I can't answer. But,
we are working on it.
So the committee knows what's going on.
Well, passed the House, and had an election, and they took the election out.
Yeah.
It didn't make it any better or worse. It was as bad as it was.
Yeah.
I voted
for it.
I
voted for it.
I don't read that.
I think I did, too,
but
I'm not sure.
Good article.
You're supposed to get amended to take out everything except the abolish Craig?
Well, you don't need me.
No,
that was my thought.
I really don't need you.
We don't need you, Dick.
All you needed was my vote.
Dick, we don't need you.
We will meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Can you folks be available then?
No.
It won't be too long, but we'll...
Well, I enjoyed the meeting, Mr. Chairman.
It has been very productive, you know.
I had 11
on big deal.
What? I had 11:09 and we were many things that happened.
I'd move House Bill 2820 out due pass. The first of all, roll.
Again?
That's the law, Chuck, too.
Aye.
Brown. You Brown?
No.
Whipple?
Aye.
Thorne?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you, and we're adjourned.
Open the hearing on House Bill 3336, and I assume that Paul Burkett's the first one on the agenda. Okay, come on up, Bob. Go ahead, whoever wants to lead off.
For the record, my name is Robert Burko, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I am not very excited about supporting House Bill 3336. Public Utility Commissioner is involved in regulation of numerous forms of transportation at this time. We are not staffed for the regulatory function in aeronautics or any of the other modes at this time. If somebody later on would like to consider transferring the overall responsibility for regulation of all forms of transportation, I think that's an important issue that ought to be subject to rather extensive debate. But I feel that the impact of this particular bill is to turn over to our department a function that we're totally ill-equipped to handle at this time. We don't have the capable staff to do it. We don't have the resources in anywhere in our budget to handle it. And I think that it would cause the potential for considerable disruption in the air transportation field in the state. And therefore, I would hope that regulations would remain with the Public Utility Commissioner and some means might be found to adequately fund that function. I don't think this bill does that job.
Paul, do you have anything to add? I'd walk through the bill if the chairman or the committee would like to have any of it explained.
No.
I any questions?
Yes, I have a question. Oh,
you want to ask
me? I want to ask Mr. Davis a question, but
okay.
As I understand this, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Gentleman, the money ordinarily used by the PUC office to administer the duties of certification of what, third level air carriers? There's no money to do that. The money is in the hands of the Atlantic Division, isn't that correct? The DOT? And so is it not funding?
No, there's no money in our budget for air regulation. There's none been provided in our budget.
That's not my understanding, Mr. Burke. Some $50,000 that was ordinarily used in the PUC office for the conducting of hearings and so forth for the certification has now been transferred, and we'll have to get somebody from Ways and Means down here because I just talked to him this morning.
My understanding is talking to several members of Ways and Means today was we don't have money in our budget.
Well, we had the money.
Pat, you are
something else.
Representative Stevenson, according to Ways and Means staff, the money that was used or allocated to the Public Utilities Commission to implement these regulations has been transferred back to the aeronautics account but has not been reassigned to the aeronautics division to implement these regulations.
What is the aeronautics account?
Well, the aeronautics account is part of the fuel tax that is collected by the division
Under whose jurisdiction?
Under the aeronautics division.
Well,
under you? The account is under you, but there's been no appropriations
authorized.
No, sir. If I might elucidate on that just a bit, the $50,000 that was in the governor's recommended budget was taken off of there by Ways and Means and placed in a specific line item for aid to municipalities for airport development, with the understanding on our part that there was no opportunity to restore that, even though we got our increased revenue measures passed, which they did.
Okay, I think we're wasting time to get hung up on the financing part of it, because if it's the will of the majority of the bodies involved, this thing is going to pass, the financing will be provided probably through Ways and Means on the Senate side or by the emergency board. But anyway, that's really not a problem, because the policy decision is the same. Whichever the policy decision is made, the Ways and Means or the emergency board will have the machinery to take care of the financing of it, however it ends up. So I don't think we need to get hung up on that part of it.
Well, I can see then if the money, wherever it is in the, if it hasn't been transferred out of your account or you haven't transferred it out back to the PUC for their part of it, if it's still there, then if we don't pass this bill, then the PUC people have got the duty under this law, but they haven't got any money. We better go with this bill, Mr. Chairman, is the way I see
it. I don't think that's necessarily true. Whatever we do, the adjustments in the budgets will be made to take care of it, as long as we don't, spend a lot more money.
That's fine. I don't want to see whoever administrates I'm just interested that we get the job done, That's my interest in it.
Okay, are there any other questions? Paul, you had something?
Well, I might just say that if this bill were passed, we would still have to worry about getting an appropriation or an expense limitation to do it. But am I to speak on the bill at all, Mr. Chairman? There are serious technical problems with the bill itself.
Okay.
Aside from the content and the policy matter involved, I have an informal legal report from our legal counsel that the bill is quite inadequate as it now stands and would require extensive amendment in order to make it workable if it were to pass. For example, on page 7, the, well, starting on page 6, line 26, 25 and 26, section 15, the, all of the specific authorities granted in ORS 756 to the Public Utility Commissioner is removed for error by this particular amendment of this entire bill, this chapter. And it is not restored in any way to us. In other words, if I were given the responsibility of bringing what is being done now under 773 in the first couple pages here, I would need to have the same authority that listed in 756, which are now vested in the PUC. Such things as subpoenaing records, going in and examining accounts, and other mechanical functions to determine whether a carrier is doing its performance job or not.
Okay. Is that same?
That's the basic problem right there. And we do not have due to short notice, don't have an amendment prepared, but I do have a marked up bill.
Okay, it appears to be the role of the committee is going to pass this out, as we'll probably determine before this hearing is over. Then we would put it on for work session probably Monday afternoon and hope that you get those amendments prepared by that time.
And so it's quite leaving them more to staff so they can.
Yeah.
Any further questions?
Okay, I think Mr. Davis wants to testify.
There was any fighting, sir. Are you,
Patrick, do you want to testify, Mr. Davis? Come on up, sir. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Terry Pat Whitey for the record, certain service. In reference to House Bill 3336, I just want to share with you my personal concerns on the bill. After having surfaced session now with our Transportation Committee and being versed on the authorities of the PUC in reference to transportation and the Aeronautics Division's work and the personnel and the kinds of budgets that the constraints they're working under, I do not understand the necessity for this bill at this late time in session. The one thing, as I view the legislation, it is asking that the authority that is now under the PUC be transferred to the Aeronautics Division. However, it does not contain any fiscal money to support that, nor does it contain the power to transmit that authority. There is a great deal wrong with this legislation you see before you. It is not well thought out. My concern is that after 6 months, and looking at the Aeronautics Division's work and the needs of aviation in the state of Oregon, our desire to get third-level carriers to the rural, small communities, the coast, the south, and eastern Oregon, we must keep in mind that we have to have a healthy, strong Aeronautics Division. If we give them the authority to do more work without the proper funding, which could happen at this late day in the session, or without the proper power, someone can come back in 2 years from now and claim that the Aeronautics Division is not doing a good job because we botched it back in the 77 session. I don't think we want that to transpire, so I would ask that this be a very well thought out statement. I think you should be giving some direct acknowledgement from Ways and Means that they are definitely going to fund us before you pass this out, and that you give them, if you pass this out, also the power. Otherwise, it's a piecemeal transaction, and I think we might be crippling our Aeronautics Division activity.
Thank you, Pat. I don't think you were in here talking about the financing.
No.
This does still have to go through the Senate, and I imagine Ways and Means will take a look at it. And if not, if the main thing we're talking about is the policy, and I think it's
if the policy is made by the legislature, then the emergency board or the Ways and Means Committee will finance that those functions. Now, the language for the shift of authority, I think, is Mr. Burkett brought up, and we do have to take a look at that if it's our desire to do something in this direction. I appreciate your testimony, though. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Davis.
My concern is that we not be in a position to make policy prompted by bookkeeping. My concern at the moment is dealing with the bookkeeping problem. If we are to continue to provide regulation for air carriers, we would need to go to the e-board, as I understand the present posture of the budget, at the first session and get some kind of funding with which to do it. We, in our budget for the coming biennium, acknowledge that there is not much in terms of a regulatory function that we can provide to stimulate a strong and effective air carrier service in the state of Oregon, and the reason for that is that it simply is not our function to do that. I did very early on appoint an advisory committee of a retired businessman chaired by Hillman Liederman Sr. to assist the small air carriers with their business survival. And I was embarrassed to find that Ludi's diagnosis of the problem was very accurate, and he was prepared to start selling stock. Well, as you know, for an employee of the Public Utility Commission to sell stock in a regulated utility, a regulated service, is beyond the pale. So we quickly transferred Ludi and his committee to the Department of Economic Development, and I'm not sure where they sold any stock yet, but a crucial part of their responsibility and the way in which they can succeed in business is to have adequate financing and adequate guidance and counsel. And a primary function for us is in terms of looking to the public interest in their performance and to ascertain whether or not there is destructive competition going on between several carriers. If the policy of the legislature is to transfer this function to the Department of Transportation or to discontinue regulation altogether. I think some arguments can be made on, some good arguments can be made on both sides of those issues, and I'd be prepared to see that debate occur, but I wouldn't want it to occur in the context of a bookkeeping problem. And the amount was roughly $50,000 in our budget for the biennium. In my judgment, that's a that would not enable us to do any more than hold the hearings that we might anticipate from the hearings we've held in the past. And I think that's about all I could say. I'd be happy to answer your questions. Do you have some comments?
Yes, if I could, Representative Stevenson. My name is Frank Dello, for the record. I'm also with the Public Utility Commissioner's Office. I would simply like to bring to the committee's attention some concerns of persons outside the state agencies because of the short notice they were not able to be here. I've been in communication with legal counsel to Executive Flight Service, which is now doing business as Air Oregon, and they're very concerned. They're presently operating on a six-month kind of exemption permit into a variety of cities throughout the state. They want to be able to add to that authority and make that authority permanent. They're very confident that they're providing service which is needed and a service which can be provided in a financially sound way. They're concerned that this bill is going to make it impossible for them to continue to provide air service. Also, the Department of Economic Development has gotten in touch with me concerning Hewlett-Packard in Corvallis that has approached them wanting them to do something to encourage passenger commuter air service into Corvallis to provide the transportation for their corporation there. And of course, without some kind of regulatory mechanism available, that's not going to be possible either. And so they're quite anxious about that. So I think it's something that does need to be resolved. I would hate to see
the last days of the session go by and leave this kind of a problem in a limbo situation. If it's necessary, we can go to the e-board and solve it that way. I think that might be the preferable choice at this point.
Any questions?
I should say also, Representative Simpson has been in touch with me this morning. We had a lengthy conversation about this problem, and I certainly appreciate his assistance in bringing this matter forward. I think he understands the problem, because a good share of the problem is over in his part of the state, where we are concerned about providing transportation.
Mr. Frank, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Simpson.
I think the plain facts of the matter, as I could determine this morning, that there's no support for leaving the duties as they are now. And PUC, as far as the ways and means and ways are concerned, there's a strong move in there to transfer this. And as Dillo has just indicated, you can't leave this in limbo. I certainly have nothing against the way that it's been handled on the PUC. I think they've done a job, but I think we simply have to go either amend this bill and have the PUC people charge on an hourly basis and let the money come flow from the Marinarics division to them or something. We have to do something. We just simply can't walk off and leave this the way it is. I mean, that's the way I see it. And frankly, there's no support in ways and means to leave that as you see. So they're saying better change it, or like you say, go to the e-board. And frankly, I've never appeared before the e-board, and I hope I never have to. But I don't know how they function, or whether that could be, whether that could be.
It's not too bad, Ed and I have been there. What function is CUC performing at the present time that would be transferred?
Well, this is our third level commuter authority that we're talking about, so. Yeah. We have had, during the past biennium, three separate carriers, I guess, come and go. We're now into our fourth. Anytime somebody wants to begin providing passenger service, they've got to come to us for a certificate in order to do that. We take a look at their financial ability, the safety aspect, and the demand, set the schedule, set the rates, and then allow them to operate. At the present time, in addition to Air Oregon operating, one of the parties that previously provided service throughout the state, Wayne Mitchell, who had Columbia Airlines, has reorganized his corporation, and he has a case pending. He's asked us to delay hearing that case until November, when Air Oregon would finish their six-month period. So if, for instance, he wanted to pursue gaining authority to fly through the state, he's going to have authority to do so. That authority is going to have to be granted by somebody. If he doesn't have authority, he can't fly. And that's kind of the crux of the thing. We could get into a lot of the detail, but I don't think it's that.
Do you have staff that is specifically designated to work on nothing but air?
We did, during the past biennium, and perhaps Commissioner Davis wants to elaborate on this, but we went to Ways and Means with those positions eliminated from our present budget. Our plan, which we discussed with Ways and Means when they approved our budget with the $50,000 in it, was to have some of our transportation regulation persons in rail and in motor carrier also do the air carrier function. And have some overlap there. So we have taken out of our budget all of the persons that would be exclusively designated air carriers.
Well, in addition, as I understand the concept of dedicated funds, I would not be able to spend time on the regulated air carrier hearings, and I've spent a substantial amount of time in relation to everything else to be done on carrier regulation, air carrier regulation. hoping that we would be productive in providing a viable industry in Oregon.
As I recall the figures representing, we cut our budget request from $120,000 last biennium to $50,000 this biennium for air regulation.
I was just going to ask, if you charge, if I come in for a certificate and you two gentlemen are there, and are you going to charge me for that?
You would be charged $150 filing fee, and that's
filing fee.
Yeah.
That's
certainly inadequate for the kind of service that the air carriers need. Now, I'm convinced that the major need of the air carriers is protection of the market in order to give them time to get started, as well as some care and nurture while they're getting started, because essentially these are fellows who would like to fly airplanes who have not, most of the time, have not had a lot of experience. The present one we think has had good experience and may succeed, but they need help.
Yeah, but I've forgotten the number. I should remember because I was terribly interested in our third level air carrier bill that came out of this very committee. I've forgotten the number of that. Surely that must be some help. And also Senate Bill 15. You know, there's going to be maybe the things that you're talking about, policy as far as you as your assistance and your help and all, maybe some of the, except for some dollars, it may be the mechanism there for you to do just what you said to Mr. Davis. Don't you think?
Well, I would hope so.
I
testified in support of that.
Yes,
I think that one of the reasons we have this bill before us is that we recognize, and I think Ways and Means recognize, that third level air carriers need all the help they can get. And at the present time, they're jumping through two sets of hoops, one in the aeronautics division and the other in the PUC division. And they might not be the same hoops, but at least, and we have definitely given the aeronautics division certain authority and certain directives in trying to help these people, and that the thought was to put all the responsibility in one place and let them do the whole thing. They can work with them. The PUC's responsibility is more a matter of controlling rates and protecting the rights of the public. This is a case where I don't think we have that type of concerns, that if the third rate carriers are not in a position probably to take advantage of the public to that extent. And certain, and maybe could be the functions can be combined into one operation. I think it was what was the intent of this bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I think an argument can be made supporting that position. I just wish the argument had been made when our budget was there and we had determined that the legislature was really interested in having that move made. If all the adjustments can be made now, I think that argument could be joined again. My concern is that at the moment there is one air carrier operating in the state of Oregon and at the beginning of its cycle of trying to be successful, and our expectation is it will be successful. I would hope that nothing would happen by virtue of this change that would make that more difficult for them, and I suppose that for you.
Mr. Burkett, I don't think you're trying to make it more difficult for any of these third-rate air carriers to come in, are you?
No, Mr. Chairman, but I would have to point out that we have not had any requirements on the third-level carriers at all in aeronautics prior to this. We've been in a supportive role. We've offered planning assistance and done the basic market demand analysis in DOT.
I guess the question is right now is, what do you need over and above what you're doing at the present time? Are we requiring the PUC to go through some operations that probably, because of the type of thing we're talking about and the state interest in trying to promote them, the need is not there the same as it is in other types of utilities.
I think, Representative Stevenson, if Executive Flight Service were here to testify on their own behalf, they would tell you that
They think regulation is terribly important to their success. The one thing that would do them in at this point would be if someone else were to start flying without regulation, without the need for any regulation, and cutting off some of their revenue. At the present time, see, they've got a multitude of different things they're doing. They're flying around picking up bank deposits, they're handling computer cards, they've got passengers, they've got other kinds of freight, and if someone else is able to come in and pick off pieces of that, then they're not going to be able to continue operating, and they're very concerned about that. I can't make their case for them, but if they were here, they would.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think all we're doing is giving that authority now to the aeronautics division and to the PUC. The authority is still going to be there.
Now, we may have some drafting errors in the bill.
Okay.
I think probably we all know what we're talking about. There are two things. One, the funding is not in this bill. It would have to be provided. I think that's routine. If the concept of the thing is adopted by both houses, that's
unfortunately. Well, I have a question there, Chairman.
Representative.
Yes. The money that you collect in the Department of Transportation Aeronautics Division, the money that you collect, what, the sale or the tax on the on aviation gas, is that correct? Is that where you get your revenue, where you've got the, what have you got, $38,000? Is that?
You don't understand
what I'm talking about.
The source of the revenue, let me explain.
The source.
Aviation gasoline tax of 2 cents per gallon for the first time.
Yes.
And it has been approved to go to 3.
Yeah.
The annual aircraft registration fee.
Yeah.
Half
okay.
a cent. Tax on jet fuel tax.
Okay.
Jet fuel. Those are our sole sources of revenue.
And okay, now let me ask just one more question then. Have you, the $50,000 that they took out of the PUC budget, did they give you that money? Or some of it?
They put that money into the aging municipalities program.
Okay.
Line item.
Then my next question then is, you're going to use that money to pave runways rather than to use that money to certify new third level air carriers. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, you see, then we have another problem, don't we?
If we make the decision, it's got to be funded, or else they can't do it, I guess, but it will be funded.
Well,
if both bodies make the decision.
Okay, well, then the next question is then, the Ways and Means right now is saying they're not going to fund the PUC. Am I correct in that?
No.
I'm not correct in that.
They want us to make a decision on this issue so they can get on with their budgeting, whatever we want to do,
okay.
As I understand it.
Okay.
So when we make a decision on this, then they can finalize those budgets.
Yes, but if
they have to get away with
it, if we don't make a decision on this and leave the duties that the PUC has now, they're not going to have any staff or any money to fund it.
Well,
because the Ways and Means have already told me that they're not going to fund it. At least that's the way I understood it.
They have not funded it pending a decision on this. I think that, you know, if there's no funding made, it has to go to the emergency board for settlement of who's going to do it. And anyway, I think the point is now we need to have some kind of an indication about whether there's favorable reaction to the policy decision or not, so we have some idea where we're going. So, what I would like is a vote on the conception idea of whether we're going to take the Public Utility Commissioner out of the regulation of third level air carriers and give all that authority to the Aeronautics Division. If we are, then we'll continue to work out the details. If we're not, then we'll tell Ways and Means that we're not and let them worry about the funding aspect of it. So, could we have a vote on the policy decision, basically?
How are you going to vote? In this chairman?
I'm going to vote for putting it in the hands of aeronautics people, because I think if they need that kind of a coordinated program to help these third-level air carriers get moving.
Well, did I misunderstand the Department of Transportation and the aeronautics? They don't want it?
They want the money for the type of duty.
Yeah, they just feel like they don't have any money in there.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, so
I might add one bit of evidence that I haven't given you before, and I'm sorry I skipped over it. But our initial, and I must say is rather rough, fiscal impact estimate on us to take over these functions as we envision the intent of this bill is somewhere in the vicinity of $78,000 for the 2-year period.
How come the CDC can do it for 50?
They've already got the mechanism set up. They've got the staff, the regulators, the examiners, and everything else. We don't have that capability right now. We haven't developed it.
But what you're going to do is to help somebody, say Executive Airlines or Columbia, to get set up, give them all the help they can, and then you're going to have all these people out there to regulate them to death so they're not reports, and it's going to cost you $80,000 to do it. Probably what we're trying to get away from is all this brand red paper they have to go through now.
But you can't do it by waving your hand. That's what I'm trying to say. It's going to take some money to provide one staff person to help you do anything for the airport.
You think you can do it for
$150?
Who? Roger, do you want to vote on the concept before you leave? You vote aye, Ed? Max?
Well, Mr. Chairman, before I'd vote, I'd certainly have to have assurance that the Department of Transportation, the Aeronautics Division, wants the responsibility. I have to know that. The other thing is, if I'm not even sure yet whether that budget was arbitrarily, the budget of the PUC was cut arbitrarily by ways and means, if the PUC people recommended that they cut at 50, you said, and the year before, the buy-in before it was what?
I said 104.
Okay.
And now they're saying they can do it for $25,000 less than, I haven't been able to communicate with Ways and Means in any meaningful matter. It's just a matter of grabbing somebody when they fly out the door or something like that.
Mm-hmm. You know. So we've got to get up on the floor. Meetings are...
I mean, members try to reduce the bill, come before the committee.
Try to get some answers,
okay. Some of the Ways and Means members themselves have introduced it.
2300.
Their idea, they should be able to commit where they're
going to
get the funds.
Well, that's what I say too, Ed.
Okay. That sounds fair.
Yeah.